thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast from Celtic Underground. You are possibly picking this up on thecelticunderground.substack.com. If you are a paid subscriber, you can link your account to wherever you pick up your podcasts, whether that be Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever, and you can pick up the subscription feed where you get your normal feed. Just go on to Substack on the website and follow the instructions. Meantime, this is Andrew H. Smith in conversation.
Hi, and welcome to a very special episode of our Celtic Underground and Conversation series, because we've got a very special man with us, Frank Maguire. Lovely to see you, and thanks so much for accommodating us in your house.
It's a pleasure.
And very special, because I'm calling this Frank because I think you must be the most senior season book holder that we have in the Celtic community. Have you met anybody that's... Do you want to divulge your age?
I'm 96, and I don't need a season book now because I've had a complimentary ticket for the past three seasons.
Wow. And how did that come about? That's an unusually kind gesture for Celtic.
Right, well, it's possible because I have a slight connection to one of the founding fathers, Joseph McGrory. No connection to Jimmy McGrory.
No, it's different spelling,
family,
isn't
different
it?
Spelling,
different,
yeah,
family,
it's G-R-O-A-R-Y. That's right. His father married my great-aunt.
Right.
So that's how I'm connected. So I've got a blood connection.
Right, to the very start.
To the very start. When people ask me, do I brag about it? I say, yeah, I certainly, do. I certainly do brag about it.
And you should brag about the fact that 1937 was your first game, 89 years ago.
I was 8 years older.
Incredible.
I used to, my maternal uncle used to take me to the game, and we always sat right at the, as the teams came out, it was just a narrow passageway. There was no dugouts on either side or anything like that. And as the teams came out, he said, McGrory's playing. That's why I knew, because there was no public address system or anything at Celtic Park at that time.
And where was the kind of, where they come out? It wasn't where they come out now, no? Was it the other side?
Oh, no, it was right in the middle.
Was it right?
Right in the middle, yes.
There wasn't any seats there in, was there?
No. When the game started, there was just the trainer, Jimmy McMenemy was a trainer, an ex-player.
Yeah.
He was a trainer. He just stood there with he had a bag with a sort of sponge on it.
The magic sponge.
A wee bottle of smelling salts in case somebody got knocked out or something, you know.
Sometimes it's the smells you remember, isn't it? The fragments of your memory.
The players were rubbed down with the embrocation, and you could go with it quite strongly.
Yeah, and it, do you think you were always destined to, I think you grew up in Govan, did you?
Yes, the home of Rangers. Hmm?
Yeah, how was that?
It was a cold, windy day, you could hear a roar. You knew that was Rangers scoring, and of course you cursed them straight away.
Yeah, and for you, because Celtic, people think about Celtic now, but Celtic wasn't he that successful? And you were growing up with difficult times.
Oh, very difficult times. I think they had won the Scottish Cup in April 37, so I wasn't at that.
No.
But then the following year, they won the Exhibition Cup.
Oh, yeah.
The Empire Exhibition was over in Bellahouston Park, and all the games were played at Ibrox. Four top teams in Scotland, four top teams in England, and they played against each other. And I can remember the first game Celtic played was against Sunderland.
That's right, yeah.
And again, we were right down at the, and I remember it was nothing each at half time. and they had a player called Rach Carter. He was a wonderful player.
Right.
A cannonball shot in either foot. And as they came off, a Sunderland supporter came down and called out to him, "Best of luck, Rach." And Rach says, "No problem. We'll look them in the second half." Well, you can imagine the response here. As he was going up the tunnel. But we beat them in the replay. So that was.
And then Everton in the final. So you were at all those games, aye?
All those games, yeah. Aye.
Must have been magical. You would have been nine then, so it must have been magical.
And of course, it was handy. We lived in Govan.
Of course.
You see?
Yeah.
And I remember the final. I remember Johnny Crum scoring. I think it went to extra time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But he scored, and Sager was a goalkeeper. He actually got he managed to parry it a bit, but the ball went into the net. So that was a great occasion.
This early team you're seeing, you know, it's like you're talking about, you've got Johnny Crum, you've got like Bobby Hogg, Malcolm McDonald, Billy Lyon, Willie Buchan. Jimmy Delaney.
Oh, my boy, who is he there?
Yeah, Jimmy Delaney. Partly an amazing guy as well as an amazing player.
He played throughout the war. He got injured playing at Parkhead just before the war started. And he was off for two seasons. The bone wouldn't knit or something, you know. And he was off for two seasons. I went to Rangers used to have a sports day the Saturday before the season started, and I went there with two of my pals. They were Rangers supporters, they were from Govan, and as the teams came out for a five-a-side, I said, "My God, that's Delaney." He was back, and he was back to his great form again, but it didn't last long because Celtic used to play Rangers in maybe September, and then on New Year's Day. And in the September game, a corner kick was taken, and Delaney was coming in, and Dawson barged Delaney, shoved him into the back of the net,
right.
And he couldn't get up, and the Celtic supporters went mad. He started to throw bottles to try and hit Dawson. He couldn't reach him, but they were, the bloody place was full of bottles. I think Celtic had to play their home games at Shawfield as a punishment for this, and post-warning notices about their future conduct.
But I mean, we think now that supporters are badly behaved or whatever, but you must have seen some...
just as bad then.
You must have seen some sights.
Yeah. But the war time was a poor time for Celtic. They won nothing.
It was hellish.
Oh, nothing. Rangers won everything. It used to be a story about 1914, the first into the trenches, the Connacht Rangers, that was an Irish regiment. 1929, first into Highlands and Wolves, the Glasgow Rangers.
So they got the reserved occupations.
Reserved occupation, you know.
So you were only 11 when the war broke out, so...
10. I was just 10. I just turned 10.
Of course, I 10. Sorry, 10. So, as I say, you're...
People were distraught when the war started. Oh, my God, they couldn't... I mean, they had years of unemployment, you know.
Yeah.
And the last thing they needed was a war. You know.
It's always the last thing
we needed. When the war started, everybody got a job then, because... They were looking for
munitions,
munition workers. The biscuit factory up at the top of the road started to make bombs instead of biscuits.
Yeah, my auntie worked in one of those. Yeah. And for you, Lucay, I mean, it's what an incredible story that your grandfather attended the first Celtic game?
Like, yes, he did.
Was that your father or grandfather?
My grandfather.
Your grandfather. He walked in bare feet to the first game.
And that was an uncommon thing. For kids to have bare feet. Not an uncommon thing at all. He walked from Maryhill.
Yeah. Watford Mary Hill, that's where I live now.
He walked from Mary Hill in Magnus Street, I'm not sure. But he walked from there to the first game.
How did he know, did you ever talk to him about Celtic?
Oh yeah, as he walked in his bare feet, his better off cousin Joseph McGrory, who was a lawyer by that time. And when I got there,
he was dressed up to the nines like yourself.
McGrory wasn't, grandfather wasn't, you know. But see, it was quite it was luck of what intelligence you had, you know. My grandfather, his grammar wasn't very good, but he had a natural intelligence, you know. Right. He was a miner for 30 years.
Right.
You know. And
my grandfather was too,
But he was there for, I remember I went down a mine organising, especially during the war. We went down a mine in Blantyre, and and I remember, God, when will this thing ever stop?
I know. It's scary.
And I was down there for 10 minutes and I says, I've had enough of this. Get me out of here. I mean, 10 minutes and my grandfather had 30 years of it.
I know.
It's a wonder it didn't break his spirit.
Same with Jock Steen. You know, Jock used to talk about that.
That's right.
That darkness, blackness, and bleakness.
He used to, and he would be playing working as a miner in the morning and play for Albion Rovers in the afternoon, playing against Celtic.
Astonishing. And then the post-war years, my mum says she was like yourself, God rest her, but she was a Celtic nut. She used to always talk about the 50s, biting your fingernails, playing for a draw, the 40s and 50s.
I know.
It was a hard school for you, see?
Oh, aye. Because we, just after the war, the Scottish Cup was brought back, and all the records of everything that happened during the war, they're not official records.
Because they were all guest players
That's right. The first, I think it was January, the Scottish Cup was usually played, so that would be about 1946 or 47, the first Scottish Cup Celtic were playing. And played against Dundee at Dens Park, and we were scrambling to get tickets, and we were beaten 2-1. What a start. 2-1.
After you've waited all these years.
Oh, no. There's one reporter there. He was more or less set himself up as a Celtic scribe.
You know that feeling?
He commented on the game. He was born that year. And he was commenting on the game.
Right.
Worked that one out.
He must have been a child prodigy.
Oh, God, aye.
Baby prodigy. Aye. And of course then, Europe comes in, and you got to some of the great occasions.
Oh, yeah, well, the first game.
Did you go there?
Yes.
Right. Was that your first experience of being abroad, or had you been abroad outside of Celtic?
Just after the war finished, we could go abroad in 46.
Right.
I think I was in Paris or something.
Right. What was your profession?
I was a publican. Well, I took over from my grandfather, from my dad. I inherited the pub.
Right. Where was it?
It was in the Cathedral Street.
Oh, right.
Corner of Grafton Street. Nearly opposite the maternity hospital.
Yeah.
But as I say, we, from then on, Celtic, very poor teams. Great players, but never seemed to blend in. During the war, it was hopeless.
They never really tried, I don't think, during the war. They weren't interested.
Rangers tried.
Yeah.
They won everything, Celtic won nothing. And for a few seasons after that, it didn't improve much. Until about 19...
Did you worry that Celtic were ever going to be a force again? Because they were really their fourth best team in Scotland at that time.
Hibs
and Hearts.
I know. Aberdeen were good. But I remember up to Parkhead one day, I wanted to get tickets for the away game at Tynecastle. And it was Jim Kennedy.
I remember. I worked with Jim.
He said to me, I said, yeah, I want a couple of tickets for Tynecastle. He says, are you in a supporters club? I says, no, I used to be. He says, when was that? And I quoted the year. He wasn't even born.
So you kind of, you were a kid, you just went to the games yourself, by and large?
Well, once, well, I had to go because my uncle was called up during the war. So I just went my own.
Right.
You know, it was...
Even at 11?
Aye. I could just go on a tram car at Govan, up to Bridgeton Cross, and walk up to Parkhead from there, you know. That's what I did.
And you said to me, I read your some of the things that your son, who's kindly set this up for us, Paul, he was saying that the smell of the, you thought the trains were deliberately timed to go past Celtic Park because of the bench and smoke.
No, there's an old railway line behind the end up at Celtic.
Yeah, they were supposed to be reopening that for the Commonwealth Games, but didn't they?
And it was a blackout on during the war.
Right.
You know, so the games had to start early so they could finish.
Of course.
Before the and I don't see when Jimmy would come on and stop and belch out smoke. And I'm saying, he's a regular supporter. Makes it even harder for us, you know.
See, but to be there, like, having gone through that, like, so you're in the late 30s, and, I mean, Celtic didn't win. I mean, for instance, I don't think they won Ibrox between, like, 1958 and 54 or something like that. You know, these things. Oh. It was like, so you saw that. Obviously, you saw the 7-1 game then. But that was a kind of oasis in the desert, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you at that final?
Aye.
Do you remember anything about that one?
I remember Fernie scoring, was it, the final goal was a penalty kick. That was a great team. It didn't last long.
But it didn't feel, like, did you mean the barn years, the wilderness years, didn't it feel?
I'm trying to think, before they really won anything at all, was they won the exhibition cup.
Yeah. And then the Coronation Cup.
I've forgotten that. Jimmy Delaney was in he was only in the reserve team about a year, and they played what they called the Charity Cup at that time. It was a beautiful trophy.
Right.
And it was Rangers, and Jimmy had scored a hat trick.
Right.
He came in, and Mealy came in, and he says to Mealy, "What do you think of that, boss?" And he says, "Don't let it go to your head." And walked out.
So when Jock come back as manager, did you think things would change? Or was it... Because, I mean, Celtic...
They had Mick Stay for a while.
Yeah, didn't have a great time.
No, didn't last long.
And were you going to all the games at this time? Most of the games at this time, were you going home and away at this time?
Pretty well, yeah. I'm trying to think when I didn't see the 37 final.
No, that would do. You've been too young. No. But you must have seen most after that.
Oh, I saw the Coronation Final.
And you saw the Empire Exhibition.
And then Charlie Tully. What a character was Charlie. He was there for 10 years, from 48 to 58. What a scrapes he got into. Especially Bob Kelly.
I mean, were you always like... my mum was always kind of... She'd always pretty much contempt for the old...
The Whites, the Grats and the Kellys.
Yeah. He must have grown up like that.
Oh, they used to say, before the game started, Desmond White would come up and sort of look around and say, that's him trying to figure out what kind of attendances he was going to declare today. You know, we can't talk about Rangers beating the tax line. We beat them as well.
Just in different ways for lining folks' pockets. You must have grown up as a support then, just knowing that these people were holding Celtic back.
Yeah. And I see, those legions of players came and went, called them the Kelly kids, but never achieved really much, you know.
Until Jock, kind
of. Until Jock came in, and first of all, they said that didn't really want him. We couldn't have a Protestant being a manager of Celtic.
Yeah, that was Bob Kelly.
Aye, and they wanted it to be a double. Sean Fallon was going to be.
That's right, joint manager.
Joint manager. And Steve says, no way, I'm the manager. He says, he'll be my sidekick, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was it. But
and I take it Steen gave you your best days, because how could there be any better?
Well, he went to Zurich and...
Must have been some adventure. Did you go on a kind of... Was that a charter, a Celtic charter?
It was a scheduled flight.
All right.
To begin with. But I'd booked into it. I wondered why I was going. They didn't know me at the time. You know, the officials didn't know me. And of course, I was wearing a Celtic tie, of course. Oh, you're enjoying it. I said, I have the same hotel as you. And
you were in the team hotel?
Yeah.
All right.
At that time. So, and I remember we had travelled on the, was it a Saturday? The Sunday.
It used to be a week-long adventure,
aye,
eh?
Aye. Well, Tony Queen, the bookie.
Oh, yeah. He was big pals with Jock.
Aye. He didn't travel with us to begin. He came in the day after him. And he came in and he sat down. We were, it was after breakfast when we went and just sat down there to have a chat. And he came in and he had the Daily Record. Tommy Gemmell was there. And he says, Tony, he says, you got the, I look at the record. And he's looking. And he says, Tony, I say, you don't fancy your chances tonight. He's looking at the bookies' odds.
Right.
Oh, he says, I know you'll get through, he says, but he says, my odds can't be any different than any other bookie, you know. So we just left it at that. Before the games, we assembled outside the hotel to go to the game. And Tommy Game will come over to me. He says, hey, I'm looking for Tony here. I says, I haven't seen him since this morning. Well, he says, I'll tell you something. He says, hey, we've had a whip round. And we want to put £300 on us to win tonight. Weren't they supposed to do
no,
that?
No.
He says, he didn't give me the £300. He says, well, you tell him that.
Well, we've got a £300 wager.
£300 wager.
It's a lot of money, then.
Aye. The game starts and Tony was there. And as the teams come off at half time, we're two up, and Gemmell looks up at me and goes like this, I see, Father. Oh, he cursed Tony.
It's probably more than their, much more than their win bonuses.
Oh, they weren't paid washers at that time.
And the season before, you'd gone to Liverpool when they were at the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final, and your son was telling me, bizarrely, you bought Rangers shares. What's the story behind that? Why did you do that?
I'll tell you, I'd forgotten about that. We went down to Liverpool, Jimmy Gordon and myself and somebody else. Jimmy set up Radio Clyde.
Of course, yeah.
I was a good pal of mine at that time.
Lord Gordon, I think he became, didn't he?
Lord Gordon, yes, I did indeed. We knew which hotel the most of the pressmen would be in. You see, we're talking there and he's bought it. Oh, he says, there's somebody I want to talk to up there. And he left us and he came back. This guy, he says he's got 10 Ranger shares.
Right.
And I want you to know, we'd be interested in buying them. Of course, Ranger supporters, couldn't you get near them?
Of course, that's right.
We couldn't resist it. Aye, and I think I took two or three. I've got the shares up.
You still got them then, eh?
No, it's the Celtic shares I got up there.
Oh, yeah.
So, as I say, we bought these, and I could go to the Rangers AGMs.
A lot of the press guys used to buy them, and they said that's why the reason why they had them was so they could go to the AGMs, because that's the only way you could get in. They didn't let the press in.
That's right, because And I remember.
Did you ever go to the Regia?
Aye, two or three. Always near the exit. I remember once the AGM was in the Mitchell Library.
Right.
In North Street, and I had the pub just round the corner at the time. And the policeman knew me, and as I was walking into the Rangers AGM, they knew I was a Celtic supporter. And I called Quincy, well, why was you going to?
Well, did you just go for badness?
Aye, it was entertainment.
Thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast. However, if you are a paid subscriber, keep listening. There's more of the podcast left.